Hello, Shady Gang.
Hello, Shady Gang.
Hello, Shady Gang.
Hello, Shady Gang.
Tarek here.
Shoppy Charlie here.
Prunk Chocolate here.
Lando here.
And I want to personally invite you to our
first live and in-person event
on April 20th, 2024.
Live and Lit Chicago will be our chance to connect with you in a truly unique,
one-of-a-kind experience. We will be hosting a three-course breakfast,
a watch party for Man City vs. Tottenham,
and more to be announced later. You can purchase your tickets,
pre-order merch, or simply donate to our event on GiveButter.
Tap the link in the post or scan the QR code on the screen.
We want to thank our friends at FanFest Live for being our official event sponsor. Damn, they do a great job.
I look forward to getting live and lit with you in April.
You know the vibes.
Shady Gang.
Shady Gang.
Shady Gang.
Let's get it.
If you concede, even a win will be... judge how poor we are, the lack of mentality. These guys don't have what they are to do, and instead, like, we won, we prove the biggest quality that we have.
Pep on his burner account, bookmarking the nonsense being spewed over the internet. Every year at the end of the season, Manchester City go on a run of inevitability where they're unstoppable. 2 points. They sit behind Liverpool with a match in hand most of the season. People screaming about the sky falling. Sad man teams. What if I told you, Shady Gang, that we, as fans, sit in the middle of witnessing City's run of unbeaten matches, currently in a 6-match winning streak with wins against Urawa, Fluminense, Everton, Sheffield, Huddersfield, and Newcastle. You look ahead. Yes. We have the FA Cup against Tottenham. The City play Burnley, Brentford twice, Everton, Copenhagen, Bournemouth, and Chelsea. All our opponents I expect City to win against. At least 12 points. Manchester City are so great, people bitch and moan about inconsistencies, whilst we presently sit in a 6-match win streak that began with the club winning their 5th trophy in a calendar year. Sit back. Relax and ride the wave.
Hey, the most is when you the wonderful.
We're making art over here,
I
baby.
I hate it.
Capitalize A.
You have permission to make a mistake. You have permission to lose. You have permission.
And that's when we get big.
Yeah, I'm a genius.
Attack everyone and send everyone.
I think we're forgetting the most important thing. We're forgetting about focusing just on ourselves.
But we can do better. We need to take the next step, and there's no better place than taking the next step here.
Show ourselves out there how much we want to win it again.
We win 4 of the last 5 Premier League, guys. 4 of the last 5 Premier League. Are we going to do it again?
Don't ask me again about doubles, triples, quadruples, fifthuples, sextuples, and seventuples.
Don't do it. Hey, and welcome to episode 84 of Shades of...
The niggas debating my numero, not the 3, not the 2, on the UNO.
Turn it up. Energy high over here, baby. We in a winning streak. We got to act like it. Energy confident.
Let's go.
Let's go, baby. How we doing? I know it's icy cold out there. How we doing, show bros? It's currently -1 degrees right now. It's freezing. That's Fahrenheit. So
whoa, you said -1 Fahrenheit?
Yes.
Oh, I'm at 28 Fahrenheit, and I thought I was gonna say something with -3 Celsius, but my God.
No, it's bad.
It's levels. It's levels. It's
negative,
cool.
It feels -19 out here.
Oh.
It is currently -16 degrees Celsius out here in the heartland. And your boy is rocking 2 hoodies because it's cold.
It was so cold. Town bomb was the whole power grid shut down. That's how cold it was. Basically, the whole city just decided to put all the energy towards making sure the football game went through without a hitch.
If you look at the power company's outage grid, like all of the areas south and west of the stadium where I live, all the power was out. And they're like, power should come back on at 7:30. And you know how power companies are when they say, like, oh, the outage will be restored in XYZ. I don't believe that ish. No. And yet at 7:30 on the dot, house lit up like a Christmas tree. I was like, what is happening? This is a conspiracy.
Lando, Tarek, what's the temps like? I mean, Tarek, it's probably pretty chilly where you are. You're in the Midwest as well.
Yeah, it's 6 degrees Fahrenheit. Negative.
Look at you, fancy in the positives.
See, we should have probably started with me because here in Colombia, boys, it's not that bad. Can't even front. I mean, it's 51 degrees.
Hep, hep. This is like when I used to live in LA, and it would be like
it's rainy. Does that make it's rainy?
It's levels, dog. I feel so different now. It's so cold. I don't want to go outside. It's an all year across the street. That 18 second walk was so annoying. I was like, this is too much. I don't like this.
We are the most comprehensive show about Manchester City, covering both the men's and women's game, spanning both sides of the Mason-Dixon line. We are Making Art Over Here, capitalize that A. But before we get into anything at all, what I need you to do right now, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that thumbs up for us, show some love, leave a comment on what you thought on the episode, maybe retort something one of us said. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, any podcast streaming service that allows you to rate and review, please do that. 5 stars, or what's the point? This Thursday, the most dangerous show about football. Our most dope guests this week are Hollywood Kitbacks podcast, George Aldapa, a bit old banter. He's a Chelsea supporter, by the way. Try not to hold that against him. And STL City Refs, who will join us. No topics off limits, no thoughts held back. It's a good time doing our lit streams, tapping Shady Gang. And then Sunday, starting at 8 a.m., we are hosting a live watch along for our baby blue bags who take on Liverpool. Speaking of that, actually, you will, by the time this comes out, tonight, while you're listening, prepare yourselves for Tom Bomb and I and whoever else is free. We will be doing a Man City women versus Liverpool. Basically a preview show, first ever for Breaking Bread, actually. So that's what I'm really excited about. This is the first time that we're able to talk about our baby blue baddies. We're going to have a most dope guest. Tom Bomb, how do you say that name?
Kudzi. Kudzi has worked for The Athletic. She covered the World Cup for them. She's worked for a couple of other publications. She does some really dope work in WOSO. Really looking forward to chopping it up with her and just getting the lowdown on what's going on with Liverpool's really, really good season in the WSL.
Yes. So got that tomorrow, and then on the live watch along. So come hang with us, turn your TV volume down, and our live stream up, Shady Gang. All the links to everything. It's all in the show notes, the descriptions, the link tree. Just hit that button, and it's just like bang, 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 bang. There you go. In today's episode, we start with a quick transfer talk for City men and women. I actually say quick, but I actually kind of want to get into it so we can just have these conversations and move on. Following that is our Baby Blue Baddies, our Manchester City women segment hosted by Tom Bomb. After that, the review of City Men's Miraculous Comeback, thanks to our Ginger King, the Red Rocket, KDB.
Hooray.
Yay. We will finish the episode with Shock All in the Premier League applause. Transfer talk, baby. Figure we start with the City Men and then City Women, which can lead into Baby Blue Bats. Calvin Phillips, first, Juve. Couldn't afford them. Now Newcastle are in the same club. Loan fee too high. According to sources, Newcastle needed the fee to be cut in half in order for Newcastle to afford the loan. Tottenham, however, are interested in the midfield. They are depleted themselves because of injury or AFCON, where Sarr and Bissouma are participating in the competition. We might be stuck with them. smiling through the pain on the bench for the rest of the season. Only good news is if we handle the first legs of Champions League or get a good lead in the Premier League, it could give KP a chance to play. That way, we can raise the asking price this summer. This will be the last time we chat about Calvin until something happens, if anything happens. What are my show bros' latest, or what are my show bros' thoughts on the latest in the KP saga?
Well, broke folks be broke. That's one. And two, I mean, as a broke person, I know that life. I'm not like as a broke person. I know that life, but broke clubs be broke. And with today's news coming out about Everton and Nottingham Forest, I think everybody's at this point is just afraid to make a player transaction because you never know when, you know, this FFP is going to come up. And my understanding is that someone is supposed to go in front of Parliament tomorrow. I guess that would be Tuesday, the 16th, to talk about financial fair play and whether or not this needs an independent auditor. And I think that that's something that all of City's legal team has stated all along, that this needs an independent auditor. And hopefully Parliament will agree with us. But at the same time, I am not about to put my faith in any body of elected officials to do something right in sports. So that's kind of where I come down on it. I think the only teams that have money to be able to do this are teams that A, don't need a destroying defending midfielder, or B, need one but either can't pay or afraid to pay.
There's a few details to it that I just think should be kind of important, and I'm kind of proud for City to be kind of holding it to a certain standard, if I understand it correctly, which is the contingency that it is a must buy in the summer. And if I'm understanding that correctly, if I'm getting the details correct, it's $7 million a loan deal now and with an obligation to buy in the summer. And I'm sorry, I just, this is what City do. And we may just sound like before, oh, you're just being sticklers with money. You got it kind of thing. But this is what it's all about. This is about these rules and the profit and sustainability and all that. And I like it. I personally, I'm a fan of us holding true to that.
I agree with Solando. And I would say that, like, I think this is also cheeky and all those guys saying we don't want to have a Cancelo saga all over again. Where's loan? Okay, now you come back. Now we got to find another loan home for you. Like, we went to Bayern, and he came back. Now he's at Barca. And we got to deal with that in the summer. Something has to be done, even with Cancelo. So you don't want to have the extra headache. And let's be real. Like, I think we know the value. And I think somebody, a journalist said, you know, they wanted a value for an English international, a proven English international. Like, we've seen him play the World Cup. He's played at Euros. Like, he is great, just not in our system. And so if you want him, hey, up. If you can't afford them, we don't need to lose, you know, any sleep over. It's just like, hey, you just on the squad, win some more trophies, and, you know, hopefully in the summer there's more business available. But City's going to do the right thing, not the thing that, like, sadly, I get it, sadly doesn't benefit the player over the club. The club is first. And like we always say at City, like, if you can find a deal that fits our valuation, go right ahead. But if you can't find it, you got to stay put.
To go to, I think, Lando, I think it was you that said that, I think it's Newcastle can't afford the clause that, or the purchase price, well, the loan fee that we want. I would say this. If giving them the discount that they're asking for, that half, you know, they can only afford to do half on the loan fee, I would be willing to do that if it led to the guaranteed purchase, you know, clause on the back end in the summer. So if that's what it took to make that work, I would do that just so that we can kind of move on from this potential saga. We're talking $7 million is the loan fee that we're looking for, right? So that's $3.5 million. To me, it's not that $3.5 million is not worth the hassle of what we got to try to figure out to do in the summer. Now, all of that being caveated by what we're seeing going on with all these, what, you know, Nottingham Forest, Everton, and how close everyone is to, you know, breaking or failing PSR or whatever they're calling it now, FFP. But if there was a concern there, of course you hold out. But you would think that any money we could get for Calvin would help in that regard. So to me, I would make some concessions in order to get him out the door. And that's not because I don't like him or I dislike him. It's just because I just want to be done with the whole thing.
But I think when you're negotiating from a position of strength, you don't have to like concede anything, right? Like, we have him under contract. That fee was paid 2 years ago. It is what it is. If he becomes a player that doesn't, like, as we're saying, hasn't played a lot, but you're truly just an emergency player, okay, you could think of far worse options. We've
seen Pep use him in quote unquote emergencies. So, to me, keeping an asset just to say we have it doesn't do anybody any good. Especially if he's got to sit for another, because we already said, you know, we got to wait at least until summer if he doesn't go now. And then who knows what happens in the summer. To me, it's not so much of, yeah, you're right. We hold all the cards. We could just say we're not going to do it and walk away from it. But then is that what's the phrase, cut off your nose to spite your face kind of a deal?
And only thing I was going to add is that this is the opposite of Cancelo's position, because we knew Cancelo was a first team player. Like, he literally was best 11 Premier League. So it's a different level when he's unhappy compared to the person who got signed by the club and never got on. He didn't lose a spot. Nothing happened. It's just like, hey, you're just not working for Pep. Not good enough for Pep's system. Not talking about him, the player. Just saying in the system. So it's kind of like, hey, if we got to wait till summer and we lose a little bit of profit, I think we bought him for 40, right? Let's say we only sell him for 30. Because what they're trying to do is say, hey, if you take loan plus 28 as a buy-on, now you're talking about, okay, we only lose about $5 million. But if you only do, you know, you start taking about like the numbers and the spreadsheets and shit. So I think somebody this summer will come calling, because people will be active, obviously, as they always are. And maybe he goes to like an Aston Villa or like a Brighton or somewhere in that level of club, or Newcastle when they can get their money right. But I'm all for City saying, hey, just work, keep working, Calvin. Keep winning these medals, bro. Like, it's okay. It's the worst thing to be.
I think I want to further that point, though. I would like to note the professionalism in Calvin in sticking with the squad, sticking with his job and doing it without showing face, without getting pissed at training, without forcing himself to be put into a corner to where he gets out in a bad situation. His professionalism is something to note, that back in, if the summer comes where we do get a deal done and it is somewhat favorable, I'm with T where I'm happy because, yes, we're out of it, but also he deserves it. The man rode the bench and saw his boy succeed, and he's doing everything that he can. It's just a matter of liking and Pep and trust, right? Pep and the trust that he doesn't have in him. That's fine. But someone else, I think someone else has said it, just because he doesn't work for our system doesn't mean he can't work for you all, because our system's a hell of a lot fucking better. And I don't care who the fuck you are. Our system's better. So he can play for you.
And I think that, like, to your point, Lando, like, when he came in, we already knew that he was going to be a good vibes guy. Like, there was, like, you were never worried about him being a locker room cancer. I think that that's one of the reasons why Pep got Cancelo out the paint so expeditiously about a year ago, because, like, he knew that that guy could be a locker room cancer. So you're not going to necessarily see that, like, like, he's causing drama on the training ground, in the dressing room. Like, we know what kind of character we brought into the club. So
he's full vibes.
Yeah.
He's exactly. Full vibes.
Yeah. Like, he is like right below Scott Carson on the vibes meter.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely there. He'll do anything for his boys. You can just tell.
Yeah.
Throughout everything, I mean, everything tells me the guy's all about seeing other people succeed. I want it for him so badly. Pep ain't there with it.
All right. Well, we'll keep it moving to Claudio Echeverri, the 18-year-old Argentinian number 10 for River Plate. Finishing touches. on the agreement are happening, 12 million pounds with bonuses. Fabrizio, I believe, made the here we go post. The bonuses and the fact that he's being loaned back to River Plate is what's taking so long. Yes, City are doing what they did with Julian, which went well. Manchester also loaned Kaiki back to Fluminense, and they sat him on the bench on purpose being asshats. Argentina's league starts January 28th. Claudio has to leave halfway through the season. And how much time do you want to give to a player leaving? Methinks CFG are tabulating a you better play his ass tax, figuring out what that sum is. He does the spring and possibly summer, possibly fall with River Plate. I went on an Echeverri deep dive, and here's my scouting report on Echeverri, aka El Diabrito. The little
go on, boy. Say that one more time for the people. Say that one more time for the people, real quick. I was waiting to hear that shit. This deep dive is about to be very accurate, by the way, because I did my own separate deep dive, and the fact that he dropped the nickname. Go on, Crunk. Say it one more time for the people, dog. I'm about to love this.
I'm not gonna nail it as much. El Diabrito.
Hey,
just gotta get that tongue roll. Hey. So he's strong. Yeah, you know the vibes. He's strong on the ball. He loves to run at people with an aggressive technical flair. Impeccable balance. When the defenders close in on him, he just seems to bounce off the defender with the ball at his foot. He's able to use their momentum to carry himself into his run. Has the ability to shoot the laser curler that Rodri does, similar to the game winner in the CL final. He uses a paint very well, and he also pairs it with like a right foot ball drag that feels like a stutter step. He does get himself in trouble dribbling too much and not looking up. Leg strength could use some work, and he is a shooter like Julian. Hasn't found a shooting angle he dislikes. What have you heard? What have you seen? Thoughts on Claudio? Let's start with you, Lando, since you have your own thoughts on them.
So fucking accurate. I would only expand on the fact that his balance, his agility and movement in tight spaces, I feel like that's going to be a constant theme when we talk about some of our great boys that are currently on the roster that might have had some big quality moments that we might be discussing, that I might be getting amped up about as I think about in this fucking moment. But yes, boys, ballers in tight spaces seems to be a thing that Tiki and Pep love right now. And Claudio Echeverri is a perfect prime example of that. The little man has some great movement. He is fast on the ball. I would also say his vision is really, really ahead of his game. He fits perfectly as a 10, but shoots like a 9. And it's incredible. It's incredible. He really has, like Krunk said, hasn't found an angle he doesn't like to shoot from yet, which I think is really, really great as for a youngster.
So I have not had a lot of time to investigate his game. I guess my two questions to the group would be, is this, from what you see now, is this the better move than getting Barco from Boca Juniors?
And yes, but slightly. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Okay. And then my second question is, based off of what he does now, he sounds a lot like what Julian does now. Where do you see him fitting into the squad?
Well, you got it, Sharpie. All right.
I mean, just a quick, like, just
overview. No, I love it. Let's go, baby. Let's go.
I would just say this, right? To that first question, I think positionally, if we really want to be honest, Barco is just not our prototypical left back at this point, and what we, our profile of player for a defender. And so it's almost as if like City was in the conversations, but I think Boca clearly was using it to like raise the price up to Brighton, in my read of it. So no, I don't really, you know, I rate Barco, but it's not for us, right? What we do. And then on the other side, in the club, he's definitely an 8 or a 10 in the central pocket, those half spaces that we like. And you can never have too many of those players. Like, we play so many matches. The more talent you have, the better. And I just add, I love the structure of the deal because I believe it said a whole nother year. It's like, if he came, it would be like Peroni, where he came in the winter, right? And then he stayed with the club. And if we need to loan him out, let him loan him out, get some more game time. Mm-hmm. But you could see the way you guys remember, like look at KDB and Salah, right? Like Chelsea had the academy in the arts and in the early teens that was just spitting out all these products and they could put them across the world. And like we're doing the same thing, but we're also able to like not miss on players because it's harder, you know, say you missed on Salah and KDB, but you did. And so we don't do that. Like we know our Bobs, we know our Fodens, we know, and there's a different level for different players. So I think like you got to earn your place at our squad. So I think it's like if he comes in as a backup at 20 years old to Phil Foden and Julian Alvarez, perfect, right? It's like Oscar Bob now. So I think the system keeps moving.
I think Barca's more game ready now, though. In fairness to him, oh yeah, that's why he's going to Brighton, I think, because I think he's getting slotted right behind Estupiñán. I think
yeah, but they can also take the chances at Brighton, like
yeah,
that's where they want to be in the Premier League isn't where we want to be. I don't think we can take those chances.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I don't disagree. I guess the point I'm trying to make with the statement tomorrow, either playing for Man City, from what I've seen in both, I think Valentin Barco is more prepared and ready tomorrow to play for us as opposed to Gladio Echeverri would be. So that's why I think he's getting that love from Brighton. And that's why I think he is buying it. And kudos to him, because if that's what's pushing him, you're not really to come for City right now. We know how it is with the game time. So if it is, that's the thing that's pushing you, go on, Papa, do your thing. Show me first. We might come back later.
All right.
Or are we going to talk about Alex Akala?
I have questions.
Because based off of my understanding, like, I mean, he seems real young, coming from Mexico. I think he'll turn 19 this year. But it seems like he was loaned or he is a part of City Football Group, but I'm not sure if he will ever set foot in Manchester. I wonder if this is going to be one of those situations where he goes to NYCFC or if he goes to Girona or Montevideo Turbo, maybe someplace like that. But I did just kind of want to throw him in the mix and see what everyone thought about that.
I haven't heard much.
Yeah, and I didn't take it too seriously. Even when I looked into the dude, it still seems so raw where I didn't. It's like, I don't know. So, I mean, does anybody else know anything on him?
I mean, just the stuff that you can look up online. I mean, I think he's playing with LA Galaxy too. So that just goes to show you the level that he's not at. And that's not River Plate. Of course, that's not, exactly. A Premier League type club. So he's 18. I think 18. So he's the same age as those other guys, Claudio Echeverri, Barco. He's in that same age range, but it feels like he would be further away. I'm with you, Tom. I doubt that he ever sees the pitch in Manchester for City, let's say. He might show up for somebody else. But, you know, they do when the CFG teams come in and play a friendly or something. But I don't think he's really truly intended for Man City.
Three names come to mind when you say signing, but then we think CFG. Gaki, Jan Koto, and I always think of Younghead Herrera. We signed him, and I was just like, yo, is he going to ball for us? Another South American. Man, never got shine. Never got shine with City.
See, I questioned the Cuoto. I thought he was actually going to be, and maybe there's still a chance, potentially.
Yeah,
but
yeah, you're not wrong, yeah.
You know.
That's how I felt about him and Poro both. I really
was Poro's another. Both. Yeah, that's another good one, Krunk.
I do have a few more to go, so don't want to get too deep in the weeds and reminiscing about old players, even though I do love it. Quick thoughts on Pedro Neto as a player, considering the left-footed winger has been linked to Manchester City this summer. Who has seen him? If so, were you impressed enough to welcome him to the Big Blue Empire?
We're talking about dude from Wolves?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed what I take him, yes, because I'm still looking to get somebody else out on that wing and make sure that Phil is playing through the middle. So yeah, just to take away the possibility of putting Phil back over there. So I don't know. Yeah, I guess. I don't think he's, I haven't seen him be special, but I think he's, I think, how old is he? Do we know how old he is?
While you're checking on the age, I'll just say this.
23.
I think he's a baller. Like, he can go. I think that's the one profile on the team we're missing is the Marius profile. Like, everybody else is either developing into the Gundo type profile. You know, Jack is Jack. We got our striker. We got our left backs. We got our DM. We're missing the right wing girl. That's a left footer. And even if you were to play, let's say, the lineup of KDB and Foden together, but you also have Alvarez on the pitch. Foden he is the odd man out, right? He goes out wide, but he can also tuck in. We know that Pep can always change tactics. But like you said, Tarek, I love the fact that, like, if we get a true winger, we know Phil is solidified in the middle. Just like you would never play David Silva on the wing, that's where Phil Foden is supposed to live, right in the middle of the pitch, doing what he wants in between those half spaces. So any player in that ilk, I think, is great because it's just, we need the body, right? We need the person, and then they can develop and grow. I don't expect anybody to come in and be Haaland, but I expect them to be able to come in as a professional and proven in a top-flight league.
In his best season, he had 5 goals and 6 assists. That was 2020, 2021. Currently has sitting on 7 assists and 1 goal in 11 matches. He got injured, if I'm not mistaken, earlier in the year. Bit of a prospect, but I think Trunk Charlie's kind of right with the analogy. Without the proven threat of him being a consistent scorer from the winger position, I do like the analogy, but these points spot on. Anything to keep Phil in the middle, damn it. Anything. If this is the move, keep him in the middle. Cool, let's do it.
See, that's so interesting that you say that, because my thought is, like, we need a left-footed right winger to make sure that Bernardo Silva is not playing on the right wing. Don't get me wrong. Like, the man can press, like, the living daylights out of a fullback, but, like, if you go back and watch our live stream of the match, like, on Saturday, Kronk and I were very, very disappointed in the areas of the pitch where he was popping up. Like, it's just maddening. Like, that's not... It kind of, like, limits what Pep can do. So, and to be perfectly honest, I think that, like, we have seen over the years that a player like Bernardo maybe sitting alongside Rodri might be, like, don't get me wrong, Kova's done a great job, like, in this last month and a half, but...
he's been okay. I argue with great. My problem is the word great. You said great. I don't like great. I don't like great.
I mean, not like, I'm not saying that he was fucking Iniesta in there, but like he did his job. I'll put it that way. He did his job.
I like that a lot better.
He did his job. But I rate Bernardo higher as that you know, that holding midfielder alongside Rodri, higher than I would Kova as that holding midfielder alongside Rodri.
He's not fucking Iniesta in there. So true.
All right. Now.
For the ladies. Told you we were making art in 2024, baby. Goodness gracious.
It's a banger.
Ellie Roba is reportedly in advanced talks with Barcelona, planning on joining them on a free in the summer. Glad she is leaving the WSL because I did not like the rumors of United or Arsenal.
Hated them. Hated them both. Although I do have to say the funniest joke that I have seen online has been... well, yeah, Barca's interested in Ellie Roebuck. They need another midfielder. And then they like show her like mixtape highlights of like her like on the ball, dribbling past attackers in the box. I like this move a lot for her. If I'll put it this way. If her going to Barca means that Barca will stop, like the Barca fangirls and boys and theys and thems will stop saying all this craziness about Lauren Hemp joining them in the summer, I am willing to make that sacrifice. yes, absolutely, have Ellie Roebuck. Yes, but I do think that that's a good move for the player. You know, she essentially lost her spot with the. You know, with the three lionesses, with the lionesses squad. So she needs to get those minutes back. And if we're, I think of the four goalkeepers that Vegman has called in to the squad, like, I don't think you can argue that Keating has been the most informed goalkeeper. Like, I understand that Mary Earps just won, like, best goalkeeper in the world, voted on by the players. But I also look at the starting 11 that the players voted on, and I have some questions because at the back line, I saw the first half of the UWCL final, and Lucy Bronze was food. Like, she was toast. Like, toast. And I'm fairly certain that there is still a missing persons report in either Australia or New Zealand for Ella Toon, because where was she in the entire World Cup? Like, I don't know. And then you got Servando's wife on there when Bunny Shaw exists. Please.
Yeah, that's not. Please. That wasn't okay.
Please.
That was not okay.
No, but I think this is a good move for the player. You know, there's not a lot of, you're not going to see a lot of those like big transfers for players in the women's game, unless like it's a player like Alexia Putellas or a player like Sophia Smith or a Naomi Girma. So you're not really going to see that big transfer. So most of these players are going to leave on a free. Would it be great to get something from Barca? Yes. Mm-hmm. But we also know that Barca ain't got no money. So.
Mm-hmm. And
true.
Lastly, Dana Castellanos, the archeress, is rumored to be joining NWSL with expansion club Bay FC. Tom Baum, I don't really know how they did in all the drafts and how they've been doing in the offseason. Admitting that losing Dana would be unfortunate for the club, what are your thoughts on Bay FC? Would that be a good move for Dana as a player?
I think she would have good, a fairly good infrastructure behind her. I think, well, first of all, I want to say this, like, when Dana was still in college at Florida State, Dana made it a very large point that one of the reasons why she wasn't going to the NWSL and one of the reasons that she signed with Atletico Madrid was because she did not like the way that, player movement happens in the NWSL. So, for those outside of the United States and for some that you don't even know, like both MLS and NWSL are the same in that they are considered a single structure entity, meaning that when you sign a deal with a club, you're not actually signing a deal with the club, you're signing a deal with the league, which means the league owns your rights, which means that individual teams within the league then have the ability to trade where you go. I know on the MLS side, there have been several trade sagas with Julian Gressel. I know that just recently, the trade that Washington Spirit made to offload Ashley Sanchez to go to North Carolina Courage has had she didn't know. Like, she didn't have a say in that. Now, I understand that Sean Nahas was the coach of Courage, was very high on her and wanted her for a very long time. So I do find it kind of interesting that we are talking about a player who has stated like she wants that sort of autonomy to go to the club that she wants to go to, is joining this league. I think that this this is more of a situation where the player wants to get minutes, and she will definitely get those minutes in at Bay FC. Whether her experience with Bay FC will be the same as it has been with City, probably not. But like the, you know, one of the things about North American League is like we do have playoffs, so you know, if you sneak into one of those six spots, like you could go on a run like Gotham did. Again, Gotham FC was the last team into the playoffs, and then they won the championship. So that can happen just because of the parity that exists within the league. I haven't looked enough about what Bay FC is doing in their build, but from what I can read of the two expansion teams that do exist, it seems like Utah Royals do have a little bit of a better plan, long-term plan going forward than Bay FC does. So I especially like, and I remember Amy Rodriguez as a player when she played for FC Kansas City. I mean, she is part of one of the most legendary matches in NWSL history, Utah Royals versus Portland Thorns. Just, I'll put it this way. Take a Google of Amy Rodriguez, Lindsay Horan, and that's all I will say, because that was prime stuff right there.
If I could add, I just want to say that, like, Dana going to Bay FC is very similar to Calvin on the men's side, I feel like. Player who gets brought in, you have high hopes, you have an international pedigree, but for whatever reason, like, you can't get minutes in the side. Okay, what do I need to do for my career? I need to go find minutes in another top league and or with another club. And so I feel like NWSL has a great reputation. They have a big South American influence with a lot of Brazilians and, you know, Argentinians and stuff. So, like, there's a space where – and then you get to be a talisman of, like, a brand new club. So now you get the marketing deals. You get all the attention. Like, it's a win-win for both sides. If we could sell her for something, then, you know, it benefits us that she could get that time, benefits her. And to Tom's point about free agency or trades, right, like, as an American sports fan, I'm so used to it that it never moves me. But obviously, if you compare it to the rest of the world and how soccer or football is done, it's so different. And so it's like both sides of me are just like, oh, okay, she got traded. Ashley Sanchez, like, I would love to see her at Trinity and Casey Kruger, but it is what it is. But when you talk about it compared to how people across the pond do it, it's like, oh, damn, that's not like the other things that exist. And so it does put me in a conundrum, like, what's right, what's fair, versus just like how things are in this side of the sea. So it's weird.
Yeah, I think that's the key. You're right. We have become accustomed to it, to the point where it doesn't really, you don't even think about it anymore when you hear a player got traded to this team. But I think because I have been, you know, paying attention to soccer primarily for so many years, I do put it in that context. And I've heard this conversation in this, you know, framed in this way in other situations. So it, I always think about it now because I know. And it happens in all sports. It's not just soccer, even basketball, whatever. You get, hey, we traded you to this person, you know, this team over here, and pack your bags. You're on a plane, and you don't really have any say on it. And that is really crazy. I'm pretty confident this is going to work out really well for her from a on the pitch perspective. Because again, like I think it was Charlie, you said she gets to be the face of an organization again. And I think her talent probably deserves that. So excited for her. Interested to see, again, it's a expansion team. So starting from ground zero, I'm a big fan of Caprice Didasco that's on that team. Played at UCLA back in the day. They also have the former UCLA keeper Caitlin Rowland that's out there, so we'll see how it works out as far as wins and losses, but as far as her individually, I'm excited because I think it'll allow her to get back and show what she showed before she came to City.
TNT dropping knowledge tonight. Right. TNT. Hey, let me.
Well,
you
two, so it's I'm easy. To you too.
TNT. The both of you dropping absolute IQ. I do have a question though for both of you, because both of you can maybe help me with this. No trade clause. Is that a thing?
I mean, you'd have to. I don't know about in soccer. Obviously, in NBA, there's only special players get that kind of a treatment. I doubt that anybody in women's football is getting that level of control.
I think that the players that Gotham just signed, like players of that level, they probably sense. Have that. You know, when you talk about Crystal Dunn, talk about Rose Lavelle, talk about Emily Sonnet, they will probably have that. But like your average, like it would not surprise, because I think Ashley Sanchez is on her first, I was still on her first deal. So I don't believe that she would have had one in her contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd have to, I guess, argue for it, bargain for it, make it a part of your contract.
And Vlatko helped her none by not playing her at all in the World Cup. Yeah. So like it wasn't like she could display her value outside of club.
Well, Tom Baum, he messaged me a couple hours ago. He said, hey, it's 2024. I think we need to change things up a little bit. Bring in some energy. We need a new intro for Baby Blue Baddies.
P-I-T-Y, baby! Hey. It's time for the circulator. It's time for the circulator. I'ma shake my mama game. I'ma shake my mama game.
Hey, yo! Let's go! Hey, time for the circulator. Hey, now.
He forgot to cue out the music for the Only Shades portion.
That's where the only Shades QR code pops up.
Right. You guys, we have officially entered our the FA Cup portion of our season, and we did so with a draw against Durham. Durham plays in the championship. I think we talked about this on on the pre-match show, or no, not the pre-match show, on Litstream on Thursday. Durham sits fifth in the championship, but there's like a group of four teams that like 2 points separate them. I think the top two teams are only separated by goal difference, and they just in league play had just beat Southampton, which is one of those four teams. They went into the winter break on a good run of form. With this winter break, you kind of wanted to see like what is Gareth going to pull out as far as a lineup goes. And to me, I think that we probably started one of the stronger lineups that we probably could have. So, of course, we had our baby hair queen in between the sticks, Kiara Keating. From left to right, Layla Wahabi, Alex Greenwood, Laya Alexandri, Kirsten Kasparai. Our midfield was pretty much the same with Yui Hasegawa dictating tempo as the six. On the left side, we actually had Laura Coombs instead of Philippa Engeldahl, and then Jill Roard on the right. And then across the top, our dynamic top three of Hemp, Bunny, and Chloe Kelly, which happy birthday, Chloe Kelly. I know this is going to be a day late, but happy birthday nonetheless. Exactly. So we came out really just firing right away. The first goal like happened within the first 7 minutes of the match. You had that was even before I believe it was Lauren Hemp hit the bar on a shot like in the third or fourth minute. So we were breaking them down pretty easily. On the first goal in the first minute, Kirsten Kasparai got the ball out, sprayed the ball out wide to Chloe Kelly, takes it to the byline, crosses the ball in, gets right over Bunny's head. Bunny can't get a hold of it, but Fox in the Box, Laura Coombs, on the spot, like, kind of, it's, I couldn't really tell if she got it on the volley or if she got it right as it touched the ground, but either way, it was a really sweet shot. And 1-0, and like, that's one thing about Laura Coombs is, like, when she does get her opportunities, she makes the most of them. Like, I think that you saw that with her performance last season, and she's doing the same thing, picking up back up the second half of the season the same way. So you got that first minute goal, and then you have a less talented team who was at home, had the crowd behind him. I believe that Maiden Park or Maiden Castle, this was a sellout crowd for them. I believe they had like about 5,000 people in the stands, which is
Actually a record of theirs.
They
broke the record. Shout out to Kendall Rowan. We had a quick conversation. That's her area where she grew up. They use that space. It's actually Durham University's soccer area that they also use. You could hear dogs and stuff. And she said that that is very much part of the Durham charm.
Yes. Yeah, that was kind of nice, like, in the morning. And I think that my parents' dog was a little taken aback as I was watching the match. It was like, who are these dogs barking? Where are they? Then I believe it was in the 38th minute, we had Jill Roard score a goal. Like, Chloe Kelly, again, has the ball, drives towards the byline, and in the corner of the box, Jill Roard is alone, like, all alone. Like, no one is marking her for, like, 5 yards in any direction. And so she takes a touch, looks up, takes another touch, looks up, sees she has space. It's like, okay, I'm going to shoot. Takes a right-footed shot, hits the top of the cross, like, the bottom of the crossbar, hits the post, and in. So, like, it was one of those where in on both ways. You go in the half up 2-0. You're thinking, like, yeah, this is great. This is what you want on the road against a side that you know is up for this competition and that it's going to be up for you. Because I know that Durham made up I believe that the whole area of Durham made it a big deal within the town. Like, hey, come out. Come out, like, you saw it in the advertisements on bus stops and whatnot. So I thought that was really cool that they hyped up the match like that. But as the more talented team, you need to go in there and impose your will, which we definitely did in the first half. I will say that I thought that Gareth used his subs very well. And it was also I know. It was a testament to both he and Niels in that this was a match in which even though Chloe Kelly, like, provided 2 goal contributions, like, she didn't seem to really be on it necessarily. Like, she just seemed to happen to be in the right place, right time more than anything. And Bunny was off. Bunny, like, was not clinical in this match. I think she had like 4 or 5 shots, like, and none of them were on target. So I think that taking her off and taking Chloe off, putting on Mary Fowler, putting on Jess Park, kind of gave a different dimension to the team. Because, and you saw it, because literally 2 minutes after the subs were made, you get Jill Roard roaring up the right hand side. Which Lauren Hemp had actually flip-flopped once Jess Park came on to the right, where Chloe Kelly usually takes up, comes through, dribbles the ball to the top of the box, finds Lauren Hemp for a little short pass, and you think it's going to be a give and go, and then all of a sudden Jill Roard kind of ghosts behind the back line, and the keeper sees her ghost behind the back line and says, oh shit. But Lauren Hemp gets the pass over the defenders and into Jill Roard's feet, and Jill Roard just chips the keeper, because at that point the keeper's in no person's land, and is like, well, fuck. So then 3-0 City. And then also good on Mary Fowler for getting her first, I believe this is her first goal, obviously first goal in 2024, but her first goal in quite some time. So it was not an assisted goal, but it was off of a shot by Lauren Hemp from the right-hand side. Rebound spills wide. She gets a hold of it, takes a couple of touches in centrally, slots it inside the keeper as her body position was making it seem like she was going to go far post. She goes near post for a nice little tidy finish in the 87th minute. That was just a professional victory in the FA Cup. That's what you need to advance. Yes.
I actually have a little snippet of Garrett Taylor after the match.
When we showed two moments of quality in the first half and were patient with our play and made good decisions, we scored two really, really good goals. And that was the secret at half-time, really, of the message for the players, was that when we do that, when we keep the ball well and we make better decisions with improved options, then, of course, we're every chance of maybe not necessarily scoring, but we're making them defend. And probably the other side of that today is too many times we let them off the hook a little bit with poor decision-making in the final third. Some brilliant goals. We had to score a brilliant third goal when we probably could have made a bit more of our easier chances. But yeah, I have to say, considering we've had the break and everything else, players look good. Players contributed from the sidelines as well. So all in all, fairly happy. Yeah, I thought Jill was really good today, with and without the ball. She picks up some really good positions. Trying to find her was the difficult part. I think we tweaked a few things at halftime that helped and allowed us to find her a little bit more. Laya seemed to be finding her a lot. I thought she was excellent today, Laya. I felt that she was a big presence in us in possession, and most of the good stuff came usually when it involved her and Alex.
The wasted chances situation was a shot at Bunny. He actually had a couple of shots at Bunny in his 2.5-minute interview. I was just like, dang, I knew you weren't happy with Bunny, but yeesh, my boy.
Well, I mean, yes. And I think one of the reasons why you don't see a player like Bunny Shaw on like a fifth pro list that we saw or a Ballon d'Or list is that you do see all of the talent and you see some of it wasted sometimes, like in a performance like this. So you are expecting more. So I think that there needs to be a level of accountability, like, hey, like, I know you're really effing good, and I expect you to be really effing good, and you were not really effing good today. Like, not necessarily that you were bad, like, you popped up in the chances that you are popped up in the places that you were supposed to pop up in, but when you had the chance to finish, you didn't finish. But I think that speaks to, this match speaks to when our front three don't necessarily score, we still have the ability to score from the midfield, which we did not have last season. Mm. And I think that like, just Jill having that brace means a lot to the squad.
Totally agree, Tom. And I would just add that, like, if Gareth wasn't saying those things, he wouldn't be doing his job. Your job is to keep your best players at their best. And you just came off a layoff. You had breaks. I know that, you know, Bunny had personal things because of what happened with the Jamaican Federation.
Pay them their money.
Please pay them. And their fairy godmother stepping down. Miss Marley. So, like, it that is a part of things, but also, like, hey, you're there, you're healthy, you're fit. You got to produce. And you're supposed to produce in a match like Durham. Like people said before, there should have been a touchdown. Right? Like, it should have been 7 if we do what we're supposed to do. But, again, 4-0 is a beautiful game. You win. But I like the fact that, like, the goal is like, hey, we are chasing greatness. We can't stand for mediocrity. We can't stand for off days when you know you're the better side. Because we get back into WSL, it's like, hey, we're going for the title. Sam Kerr's out. We got to pounce on this. And so we need you clicking and, you know, going in full gear. So shout out to GT. And overall, like, I think back to when I was coming back east, we were talking in June about Gareth and the season. And, like, if you would have told me we would make it to January 15th, and this will be our position in all competitions, I take that 10 out of 10. And mm-hmm. So we are in a great place. We're healthy, we're firing, we're fit. There's nothing more you could ask out of a club. It's just like the men, right? The men are pushing for it. The women are pushing for it. I think it's the same deficit, right? 2 points in both leagues.
2 points.
So yeah. Like, it's pretty, like, Tom, same club. Like you always
same,
call it.
Same city, same passion. Same
club. And that's what we're doing. And so it's pretty cool to like be a supporter of both. I'm like, oh, we could go for two trophies. And I don't know who's done that. So that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that I said that if Gareth still had a job after Boxing Day, then that meant that we were in like the top two, and obviously we were in the top two after Boxing Day, and he still has his job. So I think that he knows what's on the line for him, like, because this is a prove it year for him. And I think what you said, Charlie, like to take this to football, as Steelers coach Mike Tomlin will always say, the standard is the standard. And it was apparent that Bunny did not play to the standard on Sunday. So I will be interested to see what this means for the Liverpool match. You did see quite a few substitutions. You saw Ruby Mace come in for Yui Hasegawa and give her about 15-20 inch. You saw Steph Houghton come in. My understanding is that Alana Kennedy is training, so we might see her. So I do wonder if we're going to see that, because I believe that Taylor's preferred back line is probably right now is probably Wahabi, Greenwood, Kennedy, Alexandri. And that I think that that would probably be my preferred back line as well. But you, as Krunk did point out, or I'm not sure if we stated this, but this next week we do have three matches coming up in 7 days. So you know, we have the league match against Liverpool, we have the midweek match in the Conti Cup against Man United, and then we have and then we have Spurs as well. So and like to me, like in the WSL terms, like what Spurs and Liverpool are doing, they kind of seem like interchangeable clubs. Like they kind of see like it's great to see like two like larger football clubs actually invest in their women's team. Like I think that they finally like realize like, oh, this is a way for us to make money. Well, I think that we should be doing this. But I'm also thinking that like they're kind of both overperforming just because of the tactics of their coach, which like if you kind of think about their men's side is kind of probably true on their men's side too. This upcoming week will be very, very interesting. I did want to talk about the FA Cup draw real quick. The FA Cup draw did come up this today on Monday. We have drawn Arsenal at Arsenal. And I know that like the big thing is like, oh, you know, we could have had the championship sides, and like, why are Leicester and Birmingham City playing each other? But to me, I think that this is like, that will be a match, because it'll be a weekend match. That will be a match that Kiara Keating starts, because I think that Gareth knows that she feels like she left 3 points or she left 2 points on the table the last time that we went to Arsenal. And I think that this will be her redemption arc. I think that this will be her like showing like, yes, I am a young keeper, but I can still learn from my mistakes. I can shake that off, because after that match, when we analyze it, all three of their goals were direct results of mistakes that she made. And I think that she would tell you that. So I think that this is something like it'll be a big growth moment for her. And I think it'll be a good way for Gareth to support the growth of his young goalkeeper.
And quickly, while we're speaking of the FA Cup match, I want to say shout out to our friends, Gunners and Litstream alumni, Deep D, Megan Ward, and Emily Higginbotham, who we will be having them on for a future live show episode of Breaking Bread to discuss the FA Cup match. So stay tuned for that.
Lando, were you about to say something?
Well, I was going to say that's a great group to chop it up with, but I was going to ask when that matchup is. I think that's going to be must-watch television to see. For me, I think it's a statement match for us to try to get a win there and prevail.
For certain, my understanding is that will be the weekend of the 10th and the 11th. So, mm-hmm. So it'll be the 10th. So it'll be that Saturday.
It's the same day as Chelsea Men versus Everton. They play, the City Men play early in the morning at 6:30, and then our ladies, I assume, would play later in that day.
Okay. TBD on the time.
Yeah, they haven't said anything. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no. Times are set. Like, from what I saw, it's like the women are at 7 o'clock Eastern. The men are at 7:30 Eastern. So we got a little two-screen situation.
I will say that is the first time this has happened this year. I want to say there were like three or four different times it happened last season.
That's good problems to have.
Yes.
It just means we're deeper in the FA.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
Just get your screens ready.
On the road. It's on the road, right?
Yes, we will be going to their place.
So it doesn't really affect if the women try to have a match home at the stadium and people aren't showing up because they want to go to the men's match. I mean, it's going to happen either way, but the traveling, I feel
right.
Like, yeah. Anything else in Baby Blue Baddies before we move to the match against the Magpies?
I don't have to worry about Lauren Hemp, right? She's staying, right?
I don't think so.
I would just shout out Dallas Greenwood.
Yes. Yes, on the fifth pro. That was one of the ones that the players actually did get right. As far as Lauren Hemp, I would actually be more worried about Filipa Engeldahl re-signing than I would be about Lauren Hemp re-signing.
Okay.
And even if that is the case, if we do not sign Filipa Engeldahl at that point, I know that this has been rumored for 2 years, but at this point, I would just throw a bag at Juve and say, we want Julia Grosso. I know that she is not necessarily very highly rated. She didn't have necessarily the best World Cup, but she does play very well for Juve. I think as far as like for Canada, I feel like Bev Priestman likes to play suffer ball, and that really held her back. And I think that she can be dynamic within this side.
Citizens versus Magpies. Let's start with some numbers. Get my Sharpie Charlie on. Eddie Howe's record against Pep Guardiola out of 14 meetings. Can anyone guess how many times Eddie Howe's squad has defeated a Pep Guardiola squad? I'm not even going to let you guess. One time. Eddie Howe has one win, one draw, and 12 losses to Pep. Now, you can say, that's just the manager, Kronk. You're taken away from the glorious history of Newcastle United. Out of 32 Premier League meetings between Manchester City and Newcastle United, can anyone guess how many games Newcastle United won? Again, I'm not giving you no time. It's 0-0. 9-0. Goose egg. Zilch. Theto. Sharpie, you know the vibes. Newcastle are 0 wins, 5 draws, 26 losses against the Sky Blue Army. Yikes! City versus Newcastle. Pre-match press, Guardiola was asked about the Foden and Alvarez connection, stepping up in the absence of Erling Haaland. When talking about Foden, he did say something I felt was interesting.
I think Phil is playing that after Fulham game in a World Cup there and here. I think one of the best moments I've ever seen since we were together. Hopefully he can continue to be stable in his private life and training. He loves to play football. He's been decisive in that terms, in terms of goals and assists and rhythms and everything. And Julian since the beginning of the season as well. So both are really, really important because they have a sense of goal, you know, to create something. They are really important.
Hope things stay stable in his private life. This is what made my ears twitch. Can have all the talent in the world, but if you're messy as fuck, i.e. Walker, gives the media free ammunition to make narratives and start dialogues that have nothing to do with City Football Group. I don't want to go into a deep dive into Walker because when we get to him
almost murdering Ederson. I'm sure we'll have a quick discussion. Starting 11 for Manchester City is Ederson, Vardiol, Ake, Diaz, Walker, Kovacic, Rodri, Doku, Silva, Foden, and Alvarez up top. Thoughts on the lineup before we get into the nitty gritty?
I mean, you already touched on it some with the whole Walker thing. I mean, I get it. He's our right back. He's our, you know, the captain. Best option we have. He is our captain. He's the best right back, probably, if not the world, at least in, you know, Premier League, unless you want to consider Trent Alexander-Arnold for different reasons. But
who?
The reality, yeah, exactly. For I mean, he can be a midfielder or, you know, whatever. But my point, though, with Walker, though, is we all knew coming in everything that had happened building up to this, right? We knew the situation with him and his wife. We'd seen it all over social media, yada, yada. My concern immediately looking at the lineup is, does it make sense to play him so close to everything that's happened? Is his head going to be in this match, or is he going to be distracted? That was my concern coming in. Just because, again, I think there's a lot to try to deal with for anybody. So,
Sharpie?
On the Walker front, I would say this. If Akanji was fit, he probably gets a start. With all of the other things going on, just to like lessen a little bit. And we know Akanji can play that position as a right back. But once he got injured in the midweek match, that changed everything. But for the rest of the lineup, I think it picked itself. Like, you know, KDB wasn't going to start. Love Doku being match fit. Like, you play him, I'm all for it. And yeah, I think I call like that back line. I knew Guardiola would be left, Diaz. And then Walker. So, like, and I like Koba as the partner with Rodri. They both can now interchange. Rodri, we'll talk about it. He's on a different level right now. Like, he's doing things that you have not seen a City DM do since Yaya Toure, as far as the way he's progressing. Like, so it's just, I'm just saying, like, in that same mode of like, I'm moving. I may not be producing, I'm making movements though. I'm getting key passes, I'm getting assists. So, I'm just saying, like, he's in his bag right now. He's in his
tuck. The only thing about the lineup is I'd say I wasn't really worried about Kyle Walker just looking at it. I was worried about Ruben Dias. We've been playing well. He hasn't been starting. He starts because of the Akanji injury, and I'm just thinking, fuck.
Oh, I feel you, though. So ball kicks off. Newcastle, they bring their energy, their press, forcing City to play backwards and hoof the ball up the pitch. Doku gets the ball and is called for offsides, which was weird and annoying. Newcastle, they start the ball off and score off a quick ball counter that were saved because of offsides. Actually, offsides had Newcastle in hell the entire match. Side note. Terrifying scenes because Kyle Walker, trying to stop Longstaff from scoring, not only commits an own goal, he clashes into Ederson, who needed to be removed. Photos showing whole chunks of leg missing, like cleat size holes in his leg. Shout out to Ederson, who did try to power through, almost giving up a goal though. Newcastle fans booing when Ederson went down, when he was subbed. Like, Newcastle aren't the kings of time wasting. The fuck? It was just like a real shit moment from the crowd. I don't know. I was just very.
It's a great day. No, that's a great take. You are spot on. A lot of their run last year, you could argue. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they were one of statistically the lowest teams that played the most actual active ball in the league of the 90. Spot on dig right there. Fuck that.
They are the reason why the governing bodies of the referees in the UK are like putting these astronomical amounts of stoppage time at the ends of halves, because they was on that bullshit constantly. And I think, and to like, to further the point, I think that that's why they were so pissed off when we beat them at our place last March, because we were giving them that same edit. That's why when Jack and Holland were fucking with them like that, like, they were so upset about it. It was like, oh, God, y'all are doing the same thing to us that we do to everybody else. It's like, yes, bitch, take it. So yes, that is a very spot on about Newcastle.
Thoughts on the situation though? Like, how do we feel?
I mean, I felt like, because again, I was moving during the first half. I was moving the whole match, but I couldn't watch the first half. But seeing the replays, Cal tried to make a play, right? If he doesn't try to make the play, then you're mad at him for not trying to make the play. It's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, he's not trying to injure his goalkeeper. Best goalkeeper in the world for players.
Let's go.
So just want to put that out there. Cal Walker also on the sixth of the Man City, the citizens on the best 11. They know the vibes. But yeah, it just sucks that it happened. It's unfortunate. And I hope Ederson can have a speedy recovery. But I will say, when Ortega Moreno comes on, I have no worries. I have no doubts. This isn't Zach Seven, no offense, but it's real. Like, this isn't Claudio Bravo. Like, I trust Ortega. And so it's nice to know.
I hear you. Claudio Bravo. But and I would normally say the same thing. I think in this match specifically, though, he felt a little shaky when he first came on to me. Now, I think he played his way into the match, and that's probably normal coming off the bench cold. But I felt like I wrote down in my notes, Ortega is not all bold capital Ederson. You know, just I think there were a couple times he kind of held onto the ball a little too long, just got a little too comfortable. And it gives me heart palpitations when Ederson does it. He typically gets away with it. It did the same thing to me with Ortega, and I feel like there were some opportunities that could easily have gone the other way. I hear you. I think from a goal saving perspective, shot stopping, that's probably a true statement. From his distribution and just the calmness, there was a little bit lacking in this last match, but that's not typical for him, I don't think. So maybe it's just a one-off. There's a moment where I think he plays a ball into the midfield, ends up gets stolen really quickly. I don't know if it's just immediately off the pass or what, but it come right back at us. We end up getting the ball out.
Diaz screams at him.
Well, it wasn't Diaz. It was Rodri.
You're talking about another.
It was Rodri yelling at him, and Diaz went over to Rodri to kind of calm him down.
Yes.
And he had just been on the pitch. So again, like I said, it's hard when you come in cold. But I think there were a couple other moments like that throughout the match. So if we are going to be without Ederson for a extended period of time, That may be better for him. Maybe because it gets the more playing time, he just gets to be, I don't know. But it's hard to be like, oh, Ederson's going to be away, who is the best keeper in the world, and we're not concerned about it at all, because that's not true for me. I would be somewhat concerned.
Yes, if he's gone, I will be very concerned also. And what I will say, we do have 2 weeks off. So that is like the good thing about it, is that he has plenty of time to heal. And when, Tarek, you mentioned it, it was like immediately when the game starts back up, we go to recycle. And there are actually two instances where I'm watching, and normally they would just kick it back all the way back, but they don't. They like try to turn it into something and still could go back a little bit more, go back a little more, and then finally kicked it back to Ortega. It was in the 9th minute. He kicked it out of bounds. And it took about 2 minutes. Around 11 minutes, 15 seconds when I thought, okay, they calmed down. Fun fact, Julian Alvarez has taken the most corners in the Premier League this season. It felt like Newcastle's game plan during set pieces, anytime when they had a foul, was to take the ball as quickly as they can, catch City when they're not able to catch up, plan themselves. Tom, you mentioned during the watch along how high Rúben Dias got up on the pitch. When Bruno G earned his yellow card for his tackle on Kovacic, it was because Rúben Dias was playing right wing and Bernardo was back in defense. Newcastle were trying to take advantage of that player swap, which is very weird. It's very weird. I don't like this new Rúben Dias trying to be John Stones nonsense. Like, it's just, I'm not a fan of it. I don't like it. And again, His hair is just way too scruffy. It just makes me uneasy that this nice, clean, kempt player that we had for so long, now all of a sudden just, he looks fuzzy while on like the TV screen. That's how I know who he is, because he just has like this big hair now. It's just like, what is going on, my boy?
I think Diaz's hair, Rodri's attitude, basically have middle schoolers on the pitch. As a person who works in middle schools for the last 12 years, they're basically seventh graders at this point. Yeah. They're going through things. They're finding themselves. We try different things. Maybe Ruben was inspired by Kevin's long flow, so maybe he's going toward that look. It could work. Little Maldini vibes. I like it. You know, we'll see. But yeah,
time will tell.
We're in transition. Things are happening. And if we want to flex our wings and cycle positions, you know, the more the merrier. Like, let's all get on the ball. We all want to be midfielders in Pep's system. So he said he want to play with 10 midfielders or 11 with Ederson. So there you go. We're getting closer to it.
I gotta bring this up because this game started off fucking wacky, weird, all of it. And I think a lot of us are upset at the Kyle Walker situation and trying to make a play. Here's where I don't think we're giving Kyle Walker enough shit about. Being a captain in this entire circumstance to where, first off, we've all been there, okay? We're players and we're hurt in the middle of the game. We're going to lie. Yeah, we can play through it, okay? The fact that we didn't even try to get him to pass the ball and warm up and check himself and get himself going again on Kyle. The fact that Rodri had to take it back to fucking 2001 with big timers, get your fucking roll on, with having to tell the fucking manager after Ederson clearly cannot fucking play, we have Rodri signing over to Pep like, let's go. He reminded me of Dante Culpepper throwing a touchdown to Randy Moss, immediately looking at Dante. Get your fucking roll on. What? I'm thinking, what is happening? And all this can be avoided because we get a captain that understands the circumstances and says, okay, if you're fine, can you pass the ball real quick? Can you play some 1-2s real quick? Show me. Get some time. Breathe in. If I can't see it right now, show the fucking bench. Yo, now get him in. All of it could have been avoided with a little bit more savvy seniority from a captain. That's all I got to say. Kyle Walker, I'm disappointed.
Mm-hmm. I hear you, and I'm quick to not quick. I have been one that will. I give Walker what I believe is just criticism, right? Mm-hmm. Now, some people may think that I go too far with it. I don't know, but I give him what I think is just criticism.
Tarek, I wouldn't your voice. Kill. You're being too nice this episode. I don't like this.
I
need a toddler to cough on you.
Right. I wouldn't kill Kyle for that situation because, again, I'm trusting my player. I'm trusting my keeper. If he says he can go, you know, you're going to take his word at it. And then at the end of the day, I need my players whoever they are to be mature enough to say, you know what, me trying to press through this is not in the best interest of the club. So let me go ahead and call for a substitution. And maybe it's not as big a deal as I think it is, but I don't feel like I can go right now. Let me get off and give somebody in here who can play at 100%. Because if Ederson can only give us 60%, but we can get 100% from Ortega, that might be equal or maybe more than what that 60% from Ederson. So I need him to take that responsibility there. I do think, though, that Walker – there's enough blame in this match for Walker that I don't need to give him that, in my opinion. But I definitely respect yours, though.
And I will say, and I said this on the stream, I thought that Walker, for having taken Ederson out after, like, I think while we were on the stream, I said, don't. Back pass to the goalie, don't recycle back to the keeper, he can't play, don't recycle back to the keeper, and Diaz did it anyway, which, again, Diaz not being situationally aware, that's a problem.
Well, that's a vice captain.
Yes. pass it back to him, and then, like, there was just that kerfuffle in the box where the ball was just loose, and if it wasn't for Kyle Walker coming from right to left across the goal, the box, just to make sure that Miggy and Anthony Gordon did not get their boots to it. Like, that would have been 1-0 right there. And it's a totally different match. So I will give Kyle Walker that, but that seems to me that was more of a makeup for, you know, literally taking a chunk of flesh out of your goalkeeper.
Yeah.
But I mean, was it Anthony Gordon or I forget who it was that Walker basically just comes straight through his back. It was an unnecessarily aggressive foul for no reason. And it's just like, I just need him to be smarter in those moments. And I think we have an issue where maybe we're playing so emotionally that our emotions get the best of us, because it's not just Kyle. There was a situation with Rodri where he's, you know, seeing red, he's about to lose his mind. And I forget who it was that kind of backs him away. But, you know, in that moment, he was overly emotional. He had got stamped on by Bruno Guimarães. And so now he's about to lose his mind. I just think we too often we're going over the edge with our emotions. And I just need us to be a little bit more emotionally intelligent and being able to maintain that. But with Rodri, it's, you get that he's 99% of the time, he's like the smart Hulk in the Avengers movies, where he's the Hulk, but he's still able to do all this scientific crap. But then you get the moment where he just loses his mind and all he can see is Hulk smash. And he's like, just, no! You know, losing his, he looks straight losing his head. And I just need him to be smart Hulk all the time.
And when chaos controlled Rodri comes, when he's actually controlled, where that he doesn't like break or pass that meter, he's croquettoing right outside the box and getting shots into it. That man had moments in that game where I was like, untucked Rodri's a thing. Untucked Rodri's a thing.
I've been talking about it all season.
You have.
I'm so happy that I'm finally getting my vindication, because it actually did happen. He was just mentally acting like an untucked Rodri, but the literal untucked Rodri happened. Mm-hmm. I was just like, DEFCON, it's happening, guys.
It's happening. It's like in the NBA when you see untucked Kyrie. Like when Kyrie comes out with that jersey untucked, oh, and it's baggy, like it's a different game. It's
over. It is over when that happens.
Can't stop it. We've seen it. He won a title. Yes. And so when Rodri came untucked, that man did a croqueta, a step over. I was like, oh, he's saucy. I told you. I've not seen a city DM get that saucy since Tort. It's levels.
May I simply say that untucked Stevie Franchise walked so that untucked Kyrie Irving can run. I'm just simply going to say that and leave that there. If you know, you know. But Stevie Franchise untucked was a different animal.
The man covered a video game. Just want to let the children know, Google Steve Franchise. Like, he covered a video game. That's how great he was. The Houston Rockets, Casino Mobley. Do your research.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Terrapins.
I'll say Maryland product.
Yeah, I was going to say, shout out to the Terrapins.
So I was amazed at how soft Newcastle's was allowing our players to take their time, making the pass after pass until they ended up finding Phil, Doku, or Kyle, who would advance the ball into the final third, which is how Manchester City got their first. Shortly after Diaz takes out Draco Malfoy on a counter, City counter back. Doku on the left brings a few defenders and moves the ball quickly to Walker, running up the pitch all alone, drives in a low cross to Bernardo, who, you know, the ball, it looks behind him. Nah! Bernardo with a touch, diverting the ball into the goal on his left with his right foot. What? Dubravka could only watch the ball sneak past him. City 1, Newcastle 0. What say you, my show bros, about the goal? Tomba?
I think that might be the most disrespectful City goal of the season. Like, considering the opponent, considering the venue, like, I think that was the most disrespectful goal that City has scored this season. And I loved it. Like, we were going wild on the stream. It's like, okay. Cause like my thought was after the, it was like, perfect. Like, now we can grab this match by the throat. Like, Newcastle's not going to have anything for us. This is, you know, once we score that first goal, like, nobody's touching this. We're about to kill this game off, score two more goals, call it a wrap.
I, I felt the goal's impact was a little bit more because of the fact that Newcastle were doing a little bit more attacking and kept us a little bit more vulnerable. And for us to have that goal, which we've hinted at it, it's been said before. I'm not the first one saying this, but Bernardo has those messy moments. He does these Messi-esque things. And that was one of them. I got weak foot. Weak foot. Amazing shot.
Ortega, shaking in his distribution. He has a real scary moment in the 32nd minute, almost letting Gordon sneak up on him outside the box. Newcastle do tie up the game on a turnover by Vardiol, who forced a pass that was deflected. Ball fell to Doku. He gets cleaned out. Newcastle take over possession. Bruno to Isaac, who hits Walker with the okie doke and smashes the ball past Walker and Ortega. And before I can even think, I'm like, what happened? Because, City have the ball. They lose it again. It's actually off of Vardiol, technically, again. He takes a shot. It's deflected. Almiron gets the ball. He then tries to get the ball to Gordon. It's a really long pass. It falls right in front of Ruben Diaz, who calmly takes the ball down, but in way too calm, because Isaac is right in front of him, snatches the ball from him, gets it over right to off Gordon. His foot. Like, just right off him. And gets it over to Gordon. You see Diaz yelling at Walker to get on him. Walker is still taking his time, like, I got this. Keeps his distance. Just like the... not even 2 minutes ago, gets Walker to go one way. He gets his hips going one direction. They cut the whole other. Walker can't react in time. Ball's past him and the keeper, Ortega. It's just like, what the hell is happening? Because City, that's just how the half ends. But we end the half with 70% possession, 114 more passes than Newcastle, 208 passes itself in Newcastle's half. And City are down 2-1. What the fuck, bruv? There were like many chances missed. The 16th minute shot by Bernardo that goes over the goal. Walker takes a 40-yard shot in the 19th minute that fizzes on the ground. Bernardo's gorgeous volley shortly after his first goal, right at the keeper. Vardiol, he had a chance that led to Newcastle's goal. And then the 33rd minute, there was a counter that all Alvarez needed to do was beat the keeper, and he struck the ball right at Dubravka. How were you feeling? What were your thoughts on any of the goals that we gave up? How were you feeling at the end of the first half? Thoughts to the second? Answer any of it. Talk about any of it. Just what was going on, Sharpie?
I mean, real quick. So I'm following the score. I see what happens. You catch up with the replays. And right away in my group chat with the homies, I just put time for another comeback, like with the anger emoji. Because it's like, this is what we do. Like, City's never going into a half down one, and I'm like, oh, my God, we're screwed. We can never create a goal. How will we? I don't know. You know, we're not united. Like, we're not Arsenal. Like, I don't worry about us making things happen. And so it sucked to be down, and the goals were terrible, and the defense could have been better. But it's like, we got 45 minutes. You named all the stats. We're dominating the game. We just had two moments. And so if we can just be ourselves and let our greatness shine. Oh, and Kevin De Bruyne is on the bench. I felt good winning that. I was like, hey, we're going to come out with a win.
And quickly, shout out to the homie Brawley, because I saw you guys chatting. He made the bet at half. He posted it to, and he showed it. He's like, hey, City down by one at half. You know what that means. They're going to win by one. And again, he ended up winning, I think, like $55 off of a $10 bet.
I think I said this on the stream. It was so frustrating watching all of our attack be so left-sided, the outlet on the right, or on the outlet on the right, was Kyle Walker, because you would see Bernardo push all the way over to the left-hand side, like almost over to the touchline, and you're like, what are you like? Are you not supposed to be at least nominally playing right wing? Like, what is happening? And then, so to me, I was, and I think that when we brought Elijah on at halftime and chopped it up with him. Like, I said to him, like, it's, he was like, I think that Newcastle's doing a very good job of like clogging up City's passing lanes. And I was like, City's doing a very good job of,
yeah,
of clogging up City's passing lanes because we refuse to build up on the right. And like, I get trying to pin back Kieran Trippier because like supposedly he can get in really good crosses across the box, but like he was not who we needed to be worried about in this match. And obviously as the match played out, like that was proven. That to me, that was my biggest frustration. It was like, why do we have to play through this left-hand side? And if we are going to have to play through this left-hand side, why is Kyle Walker the only outlet on the out wide high on the right?
Do I think that we can always come back? Yes. But in that moment going into the half, I was a little angry because, again, I see what I believe to be stupid mistakes that are costing us goals. And I just think, again, I told you how I felt about Kyle Walker coming into the match, because it's like, is his head going to be in it with everything that's going on? So when I see him make these two mistakes, I'm like, get this man off the pitch. He's mentally not there. So I'm angry at Av. So the wife was like, I'm going to the store. I'm going with you. I need to get away because I'm going to lose my mind. I can't watch anymore right now. I'll watch it later. I always recorded it. The DVR just knows if City is playing, just record it. It's just like, and it was freezing cold too, right? But I'm just like, I'm just going to go because anything in this moment, because I'm about to lose it. So
this motherfucker, Kyle Walker, made this man leave the house in freezing temperature to go shopping for groceries.
Yeah, really. I mean, no, don't get me wrong. I appreciate Kyle. I appreciate everything that he brings to the team, but in that moment, man, I was like, dude, what are you doing? Because again, you know, we struggle with clean sheets, right? That's always been the thing, clean sheets. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can't give away goals when we're dominating possession. We're doing everything we want to do whenever we want to do it for the most part, but yet we go into the half down. It's just like, this doesn't make any sense. How are we losing this match? And again, losing at half doesn't mean we're going to lose the entire game, because as Charlie's already pointed out, we're City and we're never out of it. But in that moment, I just needed to step away. So yeah.
Respect your personal space, boundaries. Very strong in you.
All right, well, fucking Kyle Walker.
Second half, it begins with two teams filling each other out for a couple of minutes until City take over possession. Daku was the worst rated player of the match. He did lose 9 dribble duels, which is not great. I will counter myself by saying most of the time City ended up with the ball. And in fact, was a positive because Newcastle's defense was scattered because they were trying to pounce on a possible counter. They were able to take advantage of the chances. Even after the Rodri blow-up, you could tell they were trying to get Rodri into another cart because there was the 50th minute. Dan Byrne took out Rodri. Dan Byrne did not receive a yellow card, which pissed off Rodri. Then Bernardo was booked for a foul on Fabian Schär moments after that wasn't even close to as egregious as Dan Burns on Rodri. During a City counter, Walker is running with Gordon on him, and he tries to get the ball in front of goal for someone to poke the ball in. Rodri flies into Bruno G, who shook him up from the melding of bodies. Shout out to Elijah Newsom from Coming Home Newcastle, who joined our watch along during the half to give his thoughts. When I asked him who would come on as subs, he laughed and said nobody. In the 64th minute, Newcastle really started to slow down. You could tell City players could smell blood in the water. I believe the crowd could sense something was happening. Another foul on Rodri from Longstaff, right outside the box. Again, no card. But then the change happens. The Ginger King comes on for Bernardo in the 69th minute, playing right wing. Immediately comes on to take the free kick, which leads to Alvarez skying a shot in front of goal. KDB's presence instantly creates chances, hitting the ball low, high, from any angle. Ow. Rodri, again, furious with the ref. The ball slightly deflects off a Newcastle player, yet Newcastle get the ball. Kevin immediately does what he does. Rodri finds KDB in space. KDB with a short run, fakes a pass wide. When he passes, the ball in the goal. City tied the game, Shell Bros. What are your words for KDB? His presence, what he does, and his goal.
Before we get to KDB, I'm sorry. Rodri is 6'3", making passes of a 5'10 man. Like, the way he set up De Bruyne, he cleared out three defenders with that pass. So that's why KDB has so much space, because Rodri just cut through the defense, literally, like a knife through hot butter. And it was – that's an assist, like, to just put that man in position. And, of course, KDB does what only few in the world could do, getting it through the defender's legs, literally passing it through the net. It was gorgeous. But you don't get that play, that goal without Rodri's creativity, which is the evolution. I will say, from my time watching, excuse my memory, I don't believe Fernandinho got to this level of creator, right? We knew Fernandinho could finish. We knew he could defend. But creating things the way Rodri did, come on, bro. Like, it's a different level when he's on the pitch. And so, yeah, that combo 16-17, top tier in the world.
Two things. I thought, like, immediately when KDB came on, like, it was obviously like he just gave the whole team a lift. It was, and then, like, the him scoring a goal was like, it was like Thanos in Endgame. Like, I am inevitable. Like, you know, I think, to me, the biggest thing, like, if you're Eddie Howe, how do you not have a plan to defend KDB knowing that he's on the bench? Like, to me, like, I like, as much as we hype up Eddie Howe as a tactical genius and blah blah blah, this, that, and the third, like, I'm think, like, not us, clearly, because we are smart people and we watch the football. I'm talking about the British talking heads, and, like, if you think the talking heads over here are bad,
whew. Tom, I just want to say, this, that, and the third is one of the blackest, like, statements ever. Like, you just don't hear that in the white community. This, that, and third, and, like, it's so beautiful. I love it.
I'm gonna take this moment for to shout out you on MLK Day wearing your Morehouse shirt. I think that's very important. I think that's very black. I appreciate that. To me, I don't understand, as a manager, if you know that that's an inevitability, you know that he's going to play, and you, like, you have to have your players know, like, hey, like, whatever you need to do to, like, you know, mark him one for one, or, like, we're going to make sure that we, you know, double team him and, like, let Rodri be free, let Kova be free, that's fine. But, like, I don't understand why, as a manager, that's not the first thought. Like, I need to know when KDB is on the pitch and we're going to completely change the way that we play, because we're not going to let him get comfortable in what we're, like, give him a different look than what he saw for the 60 some minutes that he was on the bench.
Newcastle's approach to the game was to attack Doku. Doku got a bit of some harsh double teams at points early on in that game too. It was clear to me that they were trying to target him. To your point, Eddie Howe, can you not have a plan for Kevin De Bruyne? It's maybe like you can't have a full plan for greatness, pure greatness. Go on, T.
Tom already said it. He's inevitable. It didn't matter what their plan was. It just didn't matter, because he is just that good. It's like you cannot put together a defense that is going to stop that man, not just from scoring, but also influencing the game through his passing, set pieces. There's just no way you can take him completely out of the match. So it's almost the other way around. It's almost, you know, in basketball, it's like we make somebody else beat us.
Mm-hmm.
It's like anybody else beat us, but just not this dude, right? But sometimes you can't do nothing about it. You just can't do nothing about it. And so I just think that the situation, the emotions, everything was just set up for him to come in and just have a outsized influence. And that's exactly what he did. He came in and kind of put his stamp on the match really quickly. So I can't wait to see when he gets truly into, you know, full 90 shape, right? When he can go the full match. This is going to be insane. Which I don't know that he should, right? He's too old. He shouldn't be going the full match. But when he gets in a position where he feels like he wants to go or he can go that long, it's just going to be insane.
And this episode has gone long enough, and I don't want to completely derail everything, but you said that this, that, and the other black-ass statements by Tom Bomb. You made a tweet yesterday that I read, and I was like, this is a black-ass statement. When you said, these touchdowns are just putting window dressing on an ass-whooping, I was just like, God damn. I saw, like, a grandpa with a new foreigner with his coat dangling on, and he's got a little crown of coke, and he's like, you hear me a little bit? I'm just like,
on that burrow. On that burrow.
No, not
come on over here real quick. Get over here real quick.
Can I please, I plead with all of you, at least one BAS of the week, black ass of the week. Please.
Nah, Crunk, that's the easiest promo we've ever done. Like that right there, BAS, black ass statement of the week.
That comes. Bang, I'm putting up, put an ass with
up. Where the hell did Tom get a cigarette? Went over there.
Bang, I'm putting an ass over right there. I know that is.
Y'all got an ass over
right there. That's what I did. That's all there.
Tom is the guy at the barbershop that would just come in and not buy anything, not get a haircut, just come in and shoot the shit and then leave with a cigarette in my, like, oh my gosh. That's incredible, man. Black ass moment of the week right here, bam.
Right. Like, that was
oh, we making art over here, baby.
Capitalize the A. Black ass moment over here.
Oh my Black god. Game back on. Bunch of back and forth. KDB gave City the moments to score, except they really couldn't finish. Pep gives the match another change in pace by taking Jeremy Doku off for the Norwegian Erlin. Oscar Bob.
You mean the Norwegian naysayer?
And Oscar Bob, the Norwegian naysayer, he was the one who created the breakthrough, the beginning of extra time. 3 minutes being added is literally being said around the stadium. When KDB, with a pass only he can make, Oscar Bob brings down the ball off Trippier, flying in, a little two-step shuffle with the ball around to Bevka, 3-2 City. I love this club so much. Oh, show bros. Thoughts and feelings, emotional states after full-time whistle. Whoa!
Well, before we get to the full-time whistle, I'm just going to say that KDB pass, it is just like any quarterback. We're in the NFL playoffs right now. Any quarterback making that throw over the top to a wide receiver streaking down the middle, or maybe even a little post pattern, it's that ball. It's so perfect. It hits that man right in stride. It is, and he does this with his feet. He can't use his hands. He plays a perfect ball with his feet. I'm telling you, this dude is insane.
Culpepper to Moss.
Yeah, it's yes.
I thought when Charlie brought it up, like when he was talking about we don't have anybody with the Mahrez profile type, that was the first time since Mahrez that I've seen a winger take a ball, like a long ball like that, that's a switch down that clean since Mahrez has left. Like I didn't know that the young kid had that in him, and then just the the presence of mind to take that like quick little touch around Dubravka, but to know that the ball was coming right back to his other foot to just put it right there. Whew.
He Kokretar crossovered in front of that man. He did it in front. It's one thing to do it to midfielders. He did it to the keeper off of a touch, off of a dime. Oscar Naldo? Oscar Bonaldo? Bob Bonito? Albino? What do we call him?
I will say this. It's beautiful to see that he had the timing to make the run. So many players, name your team striker. I won't say names. I'm not going to throw shade. We're focusing on Bob. But name your striker who's going to be off sides in that moment because they go too fast. Yeah. They're too worried. They don't trust their like pace. So they
Servando's wife. Overdo it.
You said it, I didn't. So, but yeah, I mean, like.
Let's just go ahead and call her name. Alex Morgan. We just go ahead and call her name. Ain't no need to hide from it. Ain't no need to hide from it. No, we're not going to hide from that.
I was thinking Darwin Nunez or, you know.
He said Servando's wife. I know who he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I ain't mad at him. And I'm not mad at him.
He said,
as you can see, I don't have too much love for her. So I'm okay with calling her out.
Yeah. All facts, no lies. But the man, that's a man's play. And to be literally your first Premier League goal, a game winner, when you're in a title chase, and you are officially in the second half of the season, and you are getting a ball from the greatest midfielder in the world at this present day, come on, man. Like, that's the stuff stories are written for. Like, that's fiction, but it's nonfiction at Man City. Like, that's what we do. You come into our club, you have a moment. That is what, like, the Dakua Sith game, you know, Phil doing Phil shit, Alvarez. Like, we keep getting all these players under 23. We got a U23 team out here, guys. It's the U23 squad who happens to be
We're winning cups with the U23s.
The U23s, baby.
I actually have KDB on Bob's
goal. Yeah, the ball is good, but, you know, the run from Oscar is amazing because he goes in behind Trippier, and then the control at that pace and going around the keeper in the last minute is top.
He's like, yeah, my pass is whatever. Bob, though. Oh, respect.
But that's what you would expect from a mature leader on your team, right? You want to put Bob the Builder? You want to give credit to other folks. Bob the Builder, okay.
Let's get it. Can we fix it?
Yes, we can.
Oh, man. So final whistle was blown. Oscar Bob, the 82nd minute sub, had an expected goals of 0.90. Compare that to Newcastle's Isaac, which had an XG of 0.84, and Alvarez, 0.70. Expected assists is where it gets interesting, though. Kyle Walker led with an expected assist of 0.82. Who was in second, you ask? KDB with 0.39. Kate Walker does, but the numbers will say he's effective, which is why I'm sure Pep loves what he sees. There's a video of the bald one running up to Walker and roughing him up with love after the match. The Ederson debacle came at a convenient time with the men not set to play until the 24th against Tottenham Hotspurs away. Really, final takeaways from the match before? I mean, is it really just Oscar Bob?
I think the final takeaway has to be that KDB is inevitable, and he is going to raise the level. We already know that the floor of this squad is very, very high. He raises the ceiling that much higher.
KDB is like a basketball player. Think about your favorite basketball player that draws so much attention that everyone else gets open shots. That's what he does on the pitch. Because even if they are not on him, as in the Bob assist, they are worried about him, so they don't move. They freeze. They get stuck. And then if he's driving at the defense, God bless you. Like, he can do everything on the pitch. So therefore, everyone else's job becomes that much easier. Just roll with him. Like we saw, like the line with the Cubs, like, just let the little kids follow. City had the graphic, right? The big KDB image And then the kids underneath, they know what it is. Like, we all see what's happening, and it's what the Golden State Warriors wanted when they said two timelines. But we are doing that at City. We're winning and developing the next generation at the same time. And that's all you could ask for. 32-year-old to a 20-year-old, second place in Premier League. Let's get it.
Oscar Baum, at 20 years old, 185 days, is the youngest game winner in Manchester City history since a certain baby-faced assassin scored, giving us the belief we had found our striker for the next decade. Any guesses of who that striker was?
I believe he lives in London now.
You are correct. It is Gabriel Jesus at 19 years, 308 days old. KDB's goal was the 100th goal scored for Manchester City in the Premier League against Newcastle United. On Newcastle United specifically. So the Magpies are the first club to have 100 Premier League goals scored on them by Manchester City in the Premier League. And the whole history of it. Which is really insane to me, because Newcastle have been in and out of the Premier League,
yeah.
But we just happened to always run it up against them ever since they were here. And I just think that's beautiful and that's brilliant. And I quickly have KDB on his thoughts of being.
I missed this, you know. It is what it is. I had a big injury and I needed the time, but. You know, I enjoyed myself and I worked hard, and, you know, to come in this stadium, this environment behind, and then, you know, to be fair, I think it was more willpower than anything else, but yeah, it was crazy. I know I'm not able to do that for 90 minutes for the moment, but I know I can put in a shift for 20, 25 minutes at full pace, and I feel it in my lungs, you know, with the cold, but, you know, yeah, it can't be any better than this, can it?
All right. The match week was halfway done. There's no need to do shot calls and applause. We went plenty long. Anything else from anyone before we get out of here? All right. This Thursday, tap into our lit stream starting at 7 p.m. Central Time, streaming live on FanFest Live. Shout out to our FFL familia, most dope guests, Hollywood Kipax, George Aldapa, and STL City Refs will kick it with us while turning up Footy Banter style. Watch along live stream to Sunday for our Baby Blue Baddies, who take on Liverpool in some WSL action. Links to the live stream and watch along are in the episode descriptions. Follow our social medias on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, TikTok, Instagram, Threads, YouTube, Blue Sky, etc. Links to all those things are in our episode details. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to leave a comment, hit that thumbs up. Apple, Spotify, Good Pods, whatever, please rate and review. 5 stars are what's the point? Chicago, April 20th, we're coming for you. Live shows, breakfast. We're going to be out here. We would like to see you. Links to all these things, they're in our show description. Hit that link tree. Just all the choices for you. My fantastic co-hosts, my show bros.
If you want to talk about a black ass moment, that is going to be the blackest ass moment, April 20th in Chicago.
Tom Bomb, let's start with you, sir. Let listeners know where they can find you on the social.
If there is a social media platform and I participate on it, you can find me at the handle TomBomb816. That's TomBomb816.
Garrett?
You can find me on Twitter. Or on
Threads.
No, Threads, yeah, that thing. At Tarik Peterson, TarikPeterson, at Tarik Peterson on both of those.
At Lando Martini on Twitter, X. That's all you need to find me on. Everything else, shades of blue. Get at us.
At Sharpie Charlie on Twitter. Come through. And shouts to Morehouse, shouts to MLK. American icon, one of the greatest Americans.
Let's go.
Would not be here without him living the life we do.
That is so very correct.
Yes.
Go on. Absolutely.
Yeah. Shades of Blue Pod, Shades of Blue US. We out here.
Who cares about me? You know the vibes. Shady gang, shady gang, shady gang.